This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is. With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today. You know, it seems like I was just here last week.
It does feel that way.
But, you know, Mark's gone so much that I'm glad that I could come in and hang out with a cool kid. Speaking of cool kids, we've got, of course, Sue Thomas. Thank you, Sue, for being here.
Of course.
And Hall of Famer Fred Bottomer.
Oh, thanks, Brad. Good to see you.
Good to talk to you, sir. And you're the one that makes this happen. But here's my question for the room. Did any of you have student loans?
Wait, I did, but it was a PEO loan through my mother's membership there. So does that count? Yeah, I guess so.
Well, a PEO loan, did you have to pay it back?
Uh-huh.
Okay, what's a PEO loan?
PEO is it's almost like just a women's organization that raises money. They have meetings and they raise money to give educational scholarships. But some are loans, and I had one of those.
Okay, Fred?
No, I did not
have
any.
No student loans. Ethan, no student loans?
I did not have any.
I had a truckload of student loans. I mean a lot of student loans. And so, you know, when I got married, my wife and I, we looked at these loans and we thought, we're never, ever going to get out of these loans. And but we paid it off in 9 years. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because starting today, not only are you, if you have a student loan, you're supposed to pay it back, but under the new terms, if you don't pay it back within, I believe, 270 days, meaning not that you have to pay off the loan in 270 days, but you have to make sure that you're current on your loan payments within 270 days. If you fail to do that, the federal government's going to garnish your wages.
Well, good.
And that's what I want, you know, from folks who actually had student loans, or even if you didn't. I mean, how does that impact you emotionally to know that people who borrowed money have to actually pay it back?
Well, that's how it should have been to begin with, but that's just me. So if you borrow something, you pay it back, and that's
correct.
The end.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you make the commitment, you live up to the commitment.
Exactly. And there's a lot of policy reasons here, but let me start with this. I forgot the exact year that the federal government ended up taking over the entire student loan debacle, which I believe is about $1.7 trillion right now in student loans.
Oof.
But let's say for a moment, before the government took it over, which I believe was about 20-some-odd years ago, if these loans were still handled by a bank, what would a bank do in situations where, if you don't pay your student loan, what would a bank do?
I think they'd foreclose.
Yeah, well, you can't foreclose on an education.
Well, okay. Well,
they would do what? If they can't foreclose on your education.
They're starting to take your stuff.
They're going to come in. They're going to file liens.
Yes.
Yeah, the repo man's going to be there and say, hey, give me that that diploma that you got framed on your wall. Give me that. I'm going to take that with me. But to me, these are one of the things that just baffles me. that there's this enormous movement in this country and have been even promulgated by the last administration to waive student loans and to somehow people who have student loans feel that they don't have a moral obligation to pay that back. How do we get to the point where people take out loans to go get a degree and then think, oh, I shouldn't have to ever have to pay that back?
Yeah, it's nonsensical, and everybody else is paying for it. So I already paid for mine. I'm not going to pay for yours. The end.
So Sue is about ready to say, so let it be written. So let it be done.
Mm-hmm. But it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And Fred, if you had borrowed money, I mean, wouldn't have you have expected that you would have had to have paid those loans back?
Of course.
I mean, are there any other loans in your life, Fred, where you borrow money and the lenders say, you know, Fred, you're a Hall of Famer. Man, we don't even expect you to pay that loan back on your house. I mean, just forget about it. On your car, don't worry about it, because I know you drive a Ferrari. So, I mean, on that Ferrari loan, just don't worry about it.
No, not at all.
No, it isn't. And even from a policy standpoint, think about this for a moment. There's so much in our federal government that is designed to help people who are underprivileged, or who, like, we have Medicare, we have Medicaid, we have Social Security disability, we have SNAP, we have all of these programs. And yet people who take out student loans and get degrees, if you match them with all of society, these are the highest wage earners in our society, those who have college degrees. There are even lawyers and doctors who are on this list who for the past 5 years have not had to pay back their student loans. But yet, if we're going to help the underprivileged in our country, why should we be waiving the student loans of individuals who have the greatest ability to repay those loans?
Well, you're preaching to the choir here. None of us is going for it.
Well, I know that, but I'm just giving some policy reasons here. The other thing, listen, I put 3 kids through college. My youngest daughter is now in grad school at Mizzou, I think next semester, in the fall of this year, she's going to get a tuition waiver, which, listen, I'm going out for dinner. I'm taking my wife out for dinner when that happens, right? The tuition waiver time. But the point being is, if you've been on a college campus lately, and when I say lately, in the last 15 years, there's one thing that I think that signifies that you're on a college campus, and that's the construction that's going on everywhere. And they're building all these buildings. They're creating all of these magnificent rec centers where you have a lazy river. You have a waterfall in a rec center that you can get specialized meals.
I went back to Mizzou probably last year. My dorm was torn down.
Yeah, and?
Just buildings everywhere. It was hard to even find the way I used to walk. I wanted to show my sons, here's the path I would take. You just can't get there anymore.
No, because
there's
just
everything everywhere.
There's stuff everywhere, right? And the dorm that you, did you stay in the dorm at Mizzou?
Yeah.
And so that dorm is
Hadley Major.
Real, okay.
Right by the med school.
All right.
But
and
no
it's,
longer.
It's gone, right? Right? And even if you went to the cafeteria, they've got all these fancy foods and all these gourmet items at the lunchroom. You know, I had mystery meat when I went to college. I was in line one day and I said to the lady serving food, is this beef or is it chicken? And she said, I have no idea. She had no idea. It was mystery meat. We didn't even know. It was covered with some kind of goop and they said, eat it. But my point is not to say, oh, it was really rough back when I went to school. And today, my point is this. The college tuition for the last 50 years has doubled or tripled the rate of inflation. So, for example, if the inflation rate's 2 or 3%, college tuition would go up 10 to 15% a year. It went up higher than the rate of inflation.
Jeez.
Okay, now, why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up for this reason. On college campuses, it's, as I mentioned, it's a construction paradise at all of these buildings, or all of these campuses. And they're adding all these things that add costs. And it's really pricing out regular people out of the market for being able to go to college. It's pricing them out because if you've got a product, I mean, people are screaming at the price of eggs. But why aren't more people screaming at the price of college educations? Why? Because they borrow all the money and then expect the federal government to eliminate the debt. And all that does from an economic standpoint is increase, it gives an incentive to universities to continue to increase the cost of education if they know the government's eventually going to pay for it anyway. The problem with that is we're $33 trillion in debt.
Exactly.
So there is no forgiveness of debt. There is a debt transference from individuals who borrowed the money, who signed the contract, and we're transferring that to the national debt, which is owned primarily by foreign countries, including China. So all we're doing is adding to the debt and increasing the debt load and the interest payments that right now equate to approximately $1 trillion a year that we pay in interest only, not in principal, in interest only. So to me, it just, in addition to some of the other arguments that there are in favor or against wiping out student loans, you also have the situation where we're making the problem worse. It's like saying, okay, we're going to give all firefighters, instead of squirting water on the fire, we're going to give you gasoline. And we want you to put out the fire by spraying gasoline on it. That's just going to make the problem worse. And that is what happens when we forgive student loans, because universities have no incentive to keep their prices down within the cost of inflation. They can charge whatever they want. And that hurts families across the country. And I just wish that more folks would recognize that this student debt forgiveness program is out of control. Fred, you mentioned you've got some relatives that are going to Mizzou.
No, I took my sons there.
Oh,
to
you took
show
your
them.
Sons there. Right. Oh, just show them around.
Right.
Okay. And what did you think when you were looking around at Mizzou, which is my wife graduated from the School of Journalism at Mizzou, which she likes to say is the greatest J school on the planet. But what did the Bottomer kids have to say about Mizzou, and how did you emotionally feel by looking at all of the changes that had occurred since you had been there?
I felt very small because it looks very, very big right now. And I was really impressed by all the food choices. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah. And of course, they're typically rather inexpensive, the food choices. Why? Because the parents are paying for it. That's the other thing. I don't did your kids go to college, Fred?
Yeah, one went to Rolla and the other went to SLU.
And I'm not going to ask you to use names so we can protect the innocent here, but when they were in college, did they have any idea that mom and dad were paying for stuff?
Well, they paid for their own way.
Oh, they did. They paid their own way. Good for them. Good for them. And I paid my way my way through college and law school. But when my kids were in college, their view didn't understand that this is a false universe where somebody else pays for everything and all you have to do is go and enjoy it. They didn't seem to understand that. So I wish more college kids had an understanding about what's going on here. Also, we're going to get into this probably in the next segment. But the other executive order that President Trump signed, I believe he signed it over the weekend, was the defunding of NPR and the defunding of PBS. Now, I'm going to dive into the legalities of whether that can happen or not. But just from a general standpoint, for those in the room here, should the government be funding media outlets?
Nope.
Sorry. Nope.
and why not? I mean, obviously, if you're listening right now to 97.1 FM Talk, you have to listen to ads. That's what pays for the station. But should government, or why should government, from your perspective, and Fred, I want your opinion on this too, why should government not be paying for a media outlet? Any thoughts?
I'm taking a pass. I don't really like to give my opinions on those sort of things.
Okay, that's all right.
Because I am a news reporter.
That's true. Okay? That is true. I'm nothing but a guy that fills in when Mark's not here, so I can give my opinion. And there are multiple problems with that. One of the greatest is your tax dollars are going to fund these outlets. And if these outlets like NPR and PBS are wholly basically the media outlet for the Democrat National Party. How do you think about your tax dollars going to support a media outlet that is 100% contrary to your own values?
Well, the government should not be involved in the media anyway.
Exactly.
That should be a completely separate thing so it can be covered appropriately.
Exactly. And I have lots of problems, which I'll get into in another segment here as the show unfolds. And there's also some legal issues about whether these entities can or cannot even be defunded, as it were, by an executive order. But I'll break that all down when I've got more time to dive into all of this. The bottom line is this. There's a question about whether NPR can be defunded, and we will certainly, absolutely see legal challenges challenging whether they can take that action. But for right now, we've got to take a break. Why? Because here at 97.1, we are not funded by the government. We have to have advertising on that. So we're going to go to that now. When we come back from this break, though, we are going to be talking to Thomas Gipping. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. And we're going to talk about the issue in Oklahoma right now, because Oklahoma has passed a law stating that religiously affiliated schools, like primarily Catholic schools, can qualify as charter schools, and charter schools receive funding from the state. So this is up at the Supreme Court, and the question is, can or should charter schools include religiously affiliated schools? We'll break that down next with Thomas Gipping from the Heritage Foundation. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon today, 97.1. FM.
Now at Verizon, we have some big news for your peace of mind. For all our customers, existing and new, we're locking in low prices for 3 years guaranteed on my plan and my home. That's future you peace of mind. And everyone can save on a brand new phone on my plan when you trade in any phone from one of our top brands. That's new phone peace of mind. Because at Verizon, whether you're already a customer or you're just joining us, we got you. Visit Verizon today. Price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate. Additional terms and conditions apply for all offers.
When a cold has you down, it's the little comforts that lift you up. A warm blanket, a cup of tea, and a tissue that actually feels good on your skin. Infused with aloe, Kleenex Cooling Plus Aloe provides a hint of cooling freshness to help your skin feel restored. So whether your skin is feeling dry, chafed, or irritated, you're only one wipe away from helping it feel relieved. So the next time you have a cold, get a hint of instant cooling relief with new Kleenex Cooling Plus Aloe. For whatever happens next, grab Kleenex.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
And talk. Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today. And as I teased before the break, we've got this case at the Supreme Court right now dealing with the state of Oklahoma and whether Oklahoma can and or cannot or should not allow a religiously themed school to be a part of their charter school system. And so joining us today from the Heritage Foundation, Thomas Gipping, he's a senior legal fellow in the Edwin Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Thomas, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to talk to you again, sir. And if you would, just kind of set the table. We had this case at the Supremes recently. What is the issue? What's the background, rather, of this issue as it pertains to Oklahoma?
Well, almost every state has a law providing for what are called charter schools. Charter schools are public schools, but they're a different kind of public school. They make some changes in terms of how they're run, what their curriculum is, to provide an alternative to what are oftentimes failing traditional public schools. And Oklahoma is one of those states that does that. They are government-funded, and they're heavily regulated by the government. Well, here, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City and the Diocese of Tulsa, the Catholic Church there, they applied to operate a charter school, but what they're looking for is to be able to operate a religious charter school, not a public charter school. And the Oklahoma Supreme Court said that that's not allowed under Oklahoma law. And so they appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court's going to have to decide whether states are allowed to restrict charter schools only to non-sectarian public schools, or whether they also have to open them up to religious schools. It presents a lot of new issues, because traditionally I think most people have the sense that, you know, the government isn't supposed to be creating, regulating, and funding religious schools. But that's kind of the gray area that we're talking about in this case. So depending on how the Supreme Court goes, it could have a lot of implications one way or another.
We're talking to Thomas Gipping. He is a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. And Thomas, I will let you know, during my normal day job, I'm an attorney, and so I'm familiar with a lot of these cases. And I want to ask you your thoughts on how these cases will apply to this current situation. And the first one I want to talk about, it's a case that came out of right here in Missouri. It's called Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia versus Comer. And this case dealt with, as I'm sure you know, and recall, this case dealt with a Lutheran church in Missouri that applied for a grant for a funding for playground equipment and stuff that goes, you know, on the bottom of playgrounds, so when the kids fall off, they don't, you know, fracture their cervical spine, right? So right. The school applied for the money. The state of Missouri said, no, if we give you money, we're helping to fund a religious institution. It goes up to the Supreme Court in 2017. In 2017, the Supreme Court struck down that rule in Missouri. In other words, allowing the state of Missouri to give money to this religious school, because the Supreme Court said that excluding the school strictly because of their religious affiliation, that violated the free exercise clause of the First Amendment. So with all of that speech out of the way, Thomas, my question to you is this. Do we have a similar situation here where if the Supreme Court, or rather if the courts in Oklahoma are saying that Oklahoma cannot fund a charter school because it's a religiously affiliated, do we have a violation of the free exercise clause by punishing a school simply because they are exercising their rights of freedom of religion?
Well, that case was one, as you know, one of three similar cases involving the free exercise of religion, and they all followed the same pattern. You had a private applicant for what we call a public benefit, and then the government discriminated against the applicant because the applicant was religious. That's not the pattern you find here in the charter school situation. You do have a private applicant, but the public benefit being offered is the opportunity to operate a public charter school. And that's the only benefit that's being offered under the statute. and no one is being discriminated against with regard to applying for to do that. The case you mentioned and the other two, one out of Montana and one out of Maine, the focus was on those who were applying for the grant, as you described in that case, and whether the applicant was discriminated against. Here, we're talking about not the applicant, but the benefit that the stat that the government is offering. That's a very different thing, because that's not governed by the Free Exercise Clause. That's governed by the Establishment Clause, which is the other religion clause in the First Amendment. The Establishment Clause does not allow the government to directly fund, create, and regulate religious institutions. Here, charter schools don't exist at all until a contract between the applicant and the government is finalized. And so, since that's not the case in Oklahoma, the particular religious charter school that the Catholic Church wants to start doesn't even exist. So it's just not the same. There's a couple of other ways, too, where it's sort of a square peg in a round hole, where this case really doesn't fit the pattern of those others that the Supreme Court has decided. And I'm not sure that the Supreme Court's going to be willing to really kind of chart new ground when they don't have a clear parallel with the decisions that they've made previously.
Now, I guess you followed, I'm assuming you followed the oral arguments that occurred last week at the Supreme Court?
Yes, I listened to those. Fortunately, those are live on the Supreme Court's website, and published a piece in our Daily Signal news outlet about how that went.
And by the way, now that you mentioned Daily Signal, Thomas, the Daily Signal is one of those websites that I read literally every single day. I can't even think of the last day that I didn't go to the dailysignal.com because that is one of my go-to sources for information. So thanks for bringing that up. But as you listened to the Supreme Court arguments last week, what sense did you get from the justices? And we know that that sometimes is a fool's game of trying to determine how the justices are going to rule based on their questions. I know I've been in court, and you probably have too, where on appeal, judges would ask questions that didn't necessarily align with what they eventually held. But how did you think the arguments went last week in terms of how the court may rule on this issue?
Well, it was a pretty mixed set of questions. As I said, this case raises sort of novel issues, both with regard to the religion clauses as well as the policies related to charter schools. And so justices were asking, well, are charter schools similar or different, for example, than traditional public schools? There's a lot of similarities, but some differences. Then also they were asking whether charter schools are similar to private religious schools. And there's some parallels, but there's a lot of differences. So they were trying to probe, I think, whether this case fits and how closely with the kinds of decisions they've been making lately. And I did not get the sense that any of the justices were completely satisfied that this was a really comfortable, clean fit. I want to mention, too, that one of the justices, Justice Amy Coney Barrett, she has recused herself from this case, and that's because some of her former colleagues at the Notre Dame Law School are involved as lawyers in this case. There's quite a large legal team that's defending the Archdiocese in Oklahoma. And so there's only eight justices rather than nine. And as you know, if they split 4-4, yep, that means that the lower court decision, in this case the Oklahoma Supreme Court, stands and won't be overturned. So they're going to need five justices. And I don't know, I didn't hear questions from five justices that clearly indicated they were solidly on Oklahoma's side.
We're talking to Thomas Gipping with the Heritage Foundation. Also, he writes frequently on the dailysignal.com. And Thomas, as you know, but I want to kind of set this up for the question, Under the famous case of Lemon versus Kurtzman from 1971, the Supreme Court set up a three-prong mode for examining whether or not governments should be involved with anything that's religious and thereby perhaps violating the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. But this three-prong test, very quickly, first, the purpose prong, the statute must have a secular legislative purpose. Secondly, the effect prong, the primary or principal effect of the statute must neither advance nor inhibit religion. And third, the entanglement prong, the statute must not result in excessive government entanglement with religion. As I look those three prongs over, Thomas, even though I recognize that public schools today are very low quality, that charter schools and private schools have a much better result in educating kids, preparing them for the future. But as I look over this Oklahoma situation, I can't get past the very first prong. The statute must have a secular legislative purpose if the government money would go in part to funding religious studies at Catholic charter schools. Is that a fair analysis of the situation from your perspective?
Well, I think it is. As you know, this is an area of constitutional law that the Supreme Court has really botched in a bunch of different ways for a very long time. And so it is a very confused area. And so there's a big question whether the standard you just described from Lemon versus Kurtzman is still the standard that the Supreme Court uses in Establishment Clause cases. It may not be. But if it is, I think there's a problem not only with the first prong, but also the third. And that is, actually all three, because the second one, the effect, the Catholic Church in Oklahoma says that they explicitly want this so-called religious charter school to further the mission of the Catholic Church, to proselytize, to advance their religious goals. Well, if you have a government... Yes. funded school doing that, then that may be a problem. And then third, the entanglement issue. The fact is, charter schools are regulated in at least a dozen different ways, very similar to how traditional public schools are. The government creates them. The government can abolish them. The government has to approve their personnel policies. And in a bunch of different ways, these are government schools. There really isn't any way around that. And so, as I say, this is new, uncharted territory, and ordinarily, especially where constitutional issues are involved, the Supreme Court's not willing to go into sort of controversial, disputed territory unless they have a clear path to where they want to go. Like when they overruled Roe versus Wade
yes.
a couple of years ago. They had a clear path to that goal.
Very clear.
The path here is not clear at all.
Well, Thomas Gipping, we know that you're with the Heritage Foundation, and you write frequently at thedailysignal.com. If folks want to follow your thought-provoking articles that I frequently read and I've had the pleasure of talking to you about on several occasions, how can they find you on social media?
Well, I'm at Tom Gipping, T-O-M-J-I-P-P-I-N-G, on X, and I'm a little bit behind many colleagues technically, so I'm not on other social media platforms, but I do write frequently there. And as you mentioned, the Daily Signal, which is really providing a lot more than it used to, a lot of both
yes.
news and a lot of really interesting commentary.
Last question here before I let you go. Typically, the Supreme Court issues decisions in June. Do you see this decision likewise coming down in June?
I think so. This was the second to the last argument of this term. The last one is going to be in the middle of May with regard to birthright citizenship, and then the court will be issuing decisions in all of the cases that they've heard arguments in. And so I would expect a decision here by the end of June.
Very good. And I know that thedailysignal.com will be covering that when the court issues a decision here. Tom Gipping, thanks so much for joining us here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you, sir. Hey, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, I kind of teased this in the last segment, but I'm going to break down some of the issues with regard to whether or not the president has the authority, legal authority, to cut some of these spending programs by an executive order, such as NPR or PBS. We'll look at that next on The Mark Reardon Show.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Amazon has everything for every kind of Mother's Day. Whether that's a massage gun for an at-home spa day,
or new shoes for her favorite salsa class,
or gifts like a biker helmet to unleash her inner daredevil. From hot stones to helmets, shop everything for Mother's Day on Amazon.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
How can advertising on TikTok help jumpstart sales for your small business?
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend, get a warehouse, and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads, and you gotta start now.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Brad Young sitting in for Mark today. Sue, you made a comment a minute ago I want to follow up on. You commented during the break about sunshine. What did you say?
I need it. Where is it? Bring it back. It's supposed to be here a little bit tomorrow, right? It's supposed to be peaks of sun tomorrow. I just otherwise I'm just sleepy.
Yeah, I said to my wife the other day, we have to start cheering for the Seahawks because this seems like Washington weather, where it rains every day. But Ethan, you actually like this kind of weather.
I do like this kind of weather. Now, Sue did make a good point. We've had a lot of this weather lately, but I think that, excuse me, at this time of year, this kind of weather means that it is not too hot. You're getting a nice breeze coming in, and I think it's just rather refreshing.
We talk about this at my house. Somebody is pro 50 degrees-ish. I am pro, I like 72 and a nice breeze, but sunshine.
Sure.
And it's still not too humid. It's not, you know, you understand. And then I'll have that at night in the 50s.
Yes,
is that what it is right now? Is it 50 degrees?
No, it's high 50s right now, 59, 60.
Okay, so that's a little bit lower than I prefer. It's 60 right now.
Yeah.
I can deal with 60. I'm okay with 60.
Can I have some sunshine?
Exactly. Is that too much to ask?
And 60.
And then tomorrow it could be, give me
Here's
every other
I'm
day.
Saying.
It's
Here's
just
what I'm
been
saying.
Too many.
You guys are going to be begging for clouds in a couple of months when it's 95 degrees out. That's all that
well,
I'm saying.
No kidding. We're living in today.
Yes, exactly. Tomorrow will take care of itself.
That's right.
We can complain about tomorrow.
Correct.
But today, we're complaining about today.
Yes. Dang yes. it, Bill.
Oh, listen, Bill. After the night that St. Louisans had last night, this is the weather that needs to be here today. In fact, it should be pouring today based off of the countenance of St. Louis, especially this area of St. Louis, just blocks away from the Enterprise.
And the
Center.
Way that I felt after the game, there should also be thunder and lightning, because that's the way I felt after the game last night. But I want to get to this while we have time, because I mentioned a couple of segments ago that there are some issues, policy issues, that I think are very strong in favor of defunding PBS and NPR. But the question is the legality. But I went and I just jotted down some ideas on the reasons why, policy-wise, I think we should be defunding NPR. And the most blatant that really goes through all of these things I jotted down goes to its ideological positions, which are uniformly liberal, uniformly progressive, and hostile to conservatives. For example, NPR refused to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story. Now, this was a big story, not just because it was the president's son, but because of his illegal activities that we were all made privy to after the election.
That's right.
Isn't that convenient? So when Biden was running for president in 2020, the question was, was he looking the other way while his family members were committing blatant, flagrant crimes? And we, just to refresh your memory, the laptop, Hunter Biden took his laptop to a store to get fixed. He found evidence of illegal activity. When I say he, I mean the store that fixed his computer found evidence of illegal activity. He turned it over to the police, as he is supposed to do when they find that kinds of material on a computer. So when the story got started, all of the mainstream media was uniformly standing by the position that this was fake news, that it wasn't real, that this was something concocted by, as the mainstream media likes to say, the crazy people on the right. It was concocted by them in order to try to put Biden in a bad light as he was running for president. Yet, magically, after the election, all of the analysis of the laptop said it was 100% true and accurate. It had not been modified or hacked in any way. NPR, not only did they cover that story from one direction only, I couldn't find any evidence that once the story was that the laptop was legitimate, NPR never, not once, admitted that it was fake. And this is another thing. 100% of NPR's editorial positions are held by registered Democrats.
100%?
100% of their editorial board.
Oh my gosh.
Are registered Democrats. Not even independents who vote liberal every time. They are 100% Democrats, registered Democrats. And so because of that, you say, is it really in the public interest when you're only spreading one half of the story and maligning the truth in those circumstances when you're wrong?
What's the legal question? Why couldn't he do it?
Well, to jump to the legal question, this is actually something that's been dealt with by the courts over the years. And that is, and you look at it from a constitutional perspective, Sue, you can understand how this works, that Congress is empowered under our Constitution to create the budget and to spend the money and to allocate the money. The executive branch is charged to fulfill that and to execute on what Congress tells them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to look at it this way, when Congress passes a law and it's signed into law, then if that law says the president is to jump, the president's only, question needs to be how high.
So he didn't run it by Congress first. It's not Congress approved.
Well, that's true. This is all done by executive order. And that's the problem with a lot of these executive orders right now, is that they fly in the face of law. For example, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is the parent company for PBS and NPR, they've been allocated federal money. So the executive branch, from a constitutional perspective,
should fulfill that.
They can't just say no. And in fact, it goes all the way back. In fact, there's a case at the Supreme Court going back to 1974. And this idea is called impoundment. But Richard Nixon was told by Congress to spend $9 billion on waste treatment plants in this country in the 70s. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. It's too much money. He refused to spend the money that was allocated by Congress and passed into law. It went all the way up the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, yes, the president does not have the unilateral authority to not spend money. And there was even a law passed recently about line item vetoes, which is a great idea, where a president can line item things out. Even that's been found to be unconstitutional. Mm. So as far as Trump's executive order, I'm not sure that it will hold constitutional muster. Brad Young, sitting in for Mark Reardon. Hey, we'll be back with the best part of this show, Sue's News, next.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide, or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads. We got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.